What's up?
Hey, folks, Jerry here. Welcome to the Pioneers of Insight podcast, a show that explores the wipeouts, crackups, and recoveries of inspiring and influential people. Here you'll get the stories of the quest to find success beyond the struggle and the great leaps of innovation that take us there. People that sound like this.
JLD.
What's up,
Jerry?
What's up,
man?
What's up, brother?
Thank you so much.
Well, I'm excited to be here, Jerry. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Fun today.
Keep telling your story as well.
Yeah, man.
So how's it going, dude?
Pretty good. How you doing, Jerry?
Let me just turn this freaking phone off real quick.
Okay. All right. I got my plush pillow, man.
Today, we deep dive the life story of Tony Floreal, who became an island celebrity on Guam after experiencing a mysterious holy shift. All right, strap in, folks, as we head into a story about heartbreak and light on the other side of struggle. Enjoy, and I will catch you on the other side.
So what do you fish for, like trout?
It's all trout, and there's some bass.
Good eating.
Don't eat it.
So Tony Floreal, welcome to the Pioneers of Insight podcast. I'm glad to have you here.
Thank you for having me, Jerry. Yeah, the timing's finally ripe, and we've been trying to figure out how to connect, and now we're here, so it's exciting.
It is exciting.
Yeah, man.
Let's imagine that you have a clone, but this clone has the exact same awareness that you have. If that clone was following you around today, it was Tony Flo too, watching you do what you do every day, what would Tony 2 see?
It's seeing this guy who grew up hearing impaired, you know, I still wear a hearing aid. So I had to adapt to the world. And so I just get up, wherever I am in the world. sometimes I sleep on the ground. Sometimes I get to sleep on a bed. Sometimes I sleep in my car, in hotels, airplane, buses, out in nature. So, I just, you know, I used to like get up and have like a morning routine where I would meditate. Again, it just depends on where I am in the world, but generally, it's seeing that I'm just sort of tuning into myself, being a sensitive person. I'm aware of my own thoughts. I'm aware of my moods. And like I said, I've just gotten better at like noticing these things like coming around like tides, you know. Some days I wake up and I feel amazing. Other days I feel like shit. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just always trying to figure out like how I can like optimize my day. And so this gets into like the whole flow state of being. And, but I just love just, you know, having conversations with people, you know, it's one thing that would be fun to watch as Tony 2, the clone, right? Is to see how I engage with people, how I listen, how I don't pay attention, how I, you know, drop the ball sometimes. But yeah, I'm always pretty much on the go. You know, you'll see me on some mode of transportation. If I'm not driving my car, I'm on an airplane, I'm on a bus, I'm doing Uber, taxis, riding a bike, walking. I do a lot of walking. A lot of people, if they saw me, they're like, what the hell does he do? Because it looks like he's not doing shit, you know?
Well, it's part of your mystique, and that's part of what I was drawn to. I'm gonna keep going, but...
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, it's like, does he even work? Where does he get his money? And so, you know, at those times, you would see me walking around with this black device, this machine, this black box, and you'll see me open the latch, and it's like a metal case, and you'll see me open this thing up, and it has all these dials, and it looked like it was created by some alien out of space, you know? And you'll see me with like electrode probes, and you know, I might as well be an alien, like probing on people. But people reach out to me because they probably suffer from some sort of physical pain. And I have a device that I use to help sort of bring home the bread, so to speak. And so this device has enabled me to like travel the world and help people with like pain and suffering, and actually became the bridge for these like epiphenomenal states that were happening on my own throughout my life, known as flow.
So here's a couple things that I hear. First, you said that you started out with a challenge, and you noted that in your youth that there were some challenges. The challenge got you in motion to serve other people, and then you started to tell us that now that's evolved in helping people connect to a state that you've achieved in your own life, and you call it flow, and you have a process for that, and you take people through that, and it sounds like there's some science behind that. Did I get all that right?
Yeah, that was it in a nutshell.
What would you consider your greatest challenge?
Oh, man. I mean, I've had quite a few in this life. Mm-hmm. I think the greatest challenge was just trying to discover, like, who I am and why I'm here and like, how does it even work, you know? Yeah, I definitely remember being in Santa Monica at the house that I my first almost 2 years of life living in. I remember playing in the kitchen with the pots and pans on the floor. Mm-hmm. So that was my earliest memory. And then we had to go move to San Francisco because my father abandoned us. He got into some legal troubles. He had a green card. He was from Greece. And he basically fled the country the day of his conviction in court and went down to Mexico. He left my mom, sister, and half-sister behind. So that's a whole nother story that my half-sister was born, I think, about a few days before my sister was born. At my earliest memory, I could hear fine. You know, I wasn't born with a hearing deficit.
Okay.
And then fast forward to preschool. I was going to a preschool in San Francisco that was in Japantown. So it was very like Japanese influence. But I remember the next moment being on a field trip and having massive earaches. It was so painful that by the time we came back from a field trip and got to the school, I just passed out on the sleeping area there, and just in a sweat, just pain and sweat. And I remember waking up to my mom's angelic face, you know, asking me, "Are you okay, honey?" And I was just telling her, "Mommy, my ears hurt so bad," you know. And so that was the beginning of what became my hearing challenges. So I was fitted with hearing aids when I was 5 years old in kindergarten. And so that was one, not having a father, two, being different from the other kids because I was wearing these machines on my ears, mm-hmm. right? And so I always felt like really weird. I felt different. I didn't feel like everybody else.
This is the benefit of getting to look backwards. Okay, so you're 5 years old. You're starting to see that people are looking at you differently. So rather than looking for similarities, you're seeing differences in the world, right? You become a little bit more finely attuned to what's going on outside of you because of this challenge that showed up, right? So you're 5 years old, hyper-attuned. You got a loving mother. Dad's kind of on the outside looking in. And here you go. Am I tracking you right?
Yeah, Dad completely vanished. So okay. We had no contact with him.
All right.
But yeah, you got it right on the nail. I had hypersensitive. I started to see the world in an interesting way. And so when I look back, it was my early experiences with flow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having to really listen, to be a quiet kid and to observe, start to pay attention to nuances, facial expressions, feelings, emotions that were like almost expressing out of people's bodies, like without their words, without body language. But you can sense like nature, animals, you know, the chaos of a city, the chaos of a family members fighting, arguing, you know, just feeling that pain, feeling other people's pain.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing that I'm hearing. In one sense, you're becoming more connected and making contact with what sounds like the emotional reality of life, perceptually too. And on the other side, there's some asynchronous stuff, like your body hasn't quite made the adjustments in terms of like the connections that you're making. So there's like almost like a... it's like a wobble or a split that you're having to deal with and make sense of as a very young child.
Absolutely. I mean, you're finding your natural ways of being, and then you're being confronted with these structures and artificial ways of being that are coming into conflict. So right off the get-go, I was already a non-conformist, you know? I was already questioning. I was already throwing tantrums and fits. But there would be times where I'd just be pretty angelic. I feel like connected to everything. And, you know, back in that flow state where it was like I could see the colors of the plants. I could see almost like, you know, as people describe with psychedelics, the same... like you can sense that these things are alive and that there's some sort of consciousness behind it.
So here you are making deep contact with life. You're also getting a sense of, like you said earlier on, you had a sense of the differences, but it sounded like you started to push back a little bit. Where would you say was the first point in your life, maybe as a young adult, where you got a sense of... maybe that sense of difference really came to a head?
There's like these phases, right? Mm-hmm. So the first phase was during my adolescence, where I had three people, actually two people that I was close to pass away. Mm-hmm. And I went through a breakup with my high school sweetheart. So that was like the first rock bottom moment, and then having to graduate and grow up, like, you know, go out in the real world. So then college happened. I dropped out of college three times, again being a non-conformist. I, you know, really wanted to be a medical doctor, especially on the sports side of things, and just hated school. I just thought it was bullshit. Like, why are we relearning high school in the first couple of years of college again, right? Like, let's get to it, you know.
So, well, hold on. Let me slow that down, because this is an important part of your superpower. I hear you showing up. So when you're in a situation where you're being confronted with maybe repetition or unnecessary formalities, you're the kind of person already that's willing to not just hear it and accept it, but you're willing to push back and then take some sort of action. So I hear you, you're at that age as a young adult, you're willing to speak up for who you are at that time. And I also hear a great need for stimulation and for learning. So there's a growth-oriented person in you already at that time.
Yeah, so it happened kind of both ways. So I was an athlete, and I noticed that when I put in the practice, I would get the reward. So I noticed when I would play games, everything that I worked hard for in practice would actually come out, and I would enter like flow. Huh. But then I had entered flow through meditation, just naturally growing up in a more of an Asian household. There was a lot of statues of Buddhas everywhere, and So I would like kind of the kid mimic the Buddha, you know, in the lotus position, and just like with my eyes closed, just sit there in stillness, and naturally found like prayer and meditation to be like calming and enter these almost high satori states. And then for a long time, I didn't know which was which, like you put the effort or you could just sit and play the secret, you know?
Oh yeah. So the listeners really got to get what you're saying. This is important. You're at this point in your life, and it's happening at an early point. You're starting to deal with a huge potential contradiction in life, which is it effort or is it surrendering where the best results come in? So you're struggling as a person to make sense of what's going to work best for you at that time. So you're pushing against school a little bit. You're like, because I hear the flow person wants to be in flow. The effort doesn't really... You see, effort is maybe a path to getting flow sometimes, but you're not sure what fits yet. Am I hearing it right?
Yeah, that actually like started to converge a little later. But yeah, I wasn't sure. Could I just meditate all day long and stuff would just manifest?
Work out, yeah.
Or do I need to put effort? You know, and I would see like. I would see myself like up level, and I'd be like even surprised at the abilities that would come up for me in these zone flow states. And then it was, you know, it was just like, do I put effort into something that I don't see like the point? And that was school, like, mm-hmm. Or can I just go find the expert of the field and just learn as an apprentice? Uh-huh. Versus, you know, waste a bunch of money on school tuition, waste time. Because I also hung out with a lot of older people. I felt like I couldn't have conversations with my peers. I could only really relate to older people. So I looked at them and I was like, well, I don't want to make the same mistakes. And I was all about leverage. So if I can learn from their own experiences, why should I?
I gotta dig into this. Some people, when faced with a challenge like that, let's say school, they might just suffer through it. But I hear this: you had some exposure to awareness of flow and what that felt like. But you also have something else going on here. You see a connection to potentially shortcut the process and go directly to the source. Meaning, what's the point of school when I can connect to good mentors and good people that already have this knowledge and maybe pick up from where I feel I'm really at? Was there a person in your life at that point that was maybe providing some sort of mentorship to help you make that leap? Because that seems like a huge leap for a young man to make, to see that potential.
Yeah, my mom was always that person, because she was always known as the black sheep that was questioning everything and almost like creating like chaos in the order, you know? And I always admire her ability to be outspoken. I even though I questioned things, I wasn't a person that was, you know, making a lot of noise. I still go about it in a mysterious way, which I still do. I just, you know, but people obviously see like the evidence in my social media, how I'm at these different places at different times in the world. And one day I'll be in this country and on another side of the planet the next day, you know. But my mom was the first one. And then there was just like, you know, teachers that I felt like really gave a shit. So even within school, there were certain teachers that I felt like treated me as a human being and that like really did care about my success, and then also coaches, and then life experiences, and even like small young people younger than me and animals. So I was always looking at like how I could become better through other people's examples, and it started with the elderly, but it was pretty much everybody.
What did you see at that point in your life? Because I hear this attraction to the medical field. I also hear there's a deep desire to learn and to grow. I hear the awareness to see opportunities when it's showing up, and it's not really being told or taught to you that way, but you're seeing how to take some shortcuts with, you know, going to people who could be mentors and things like that. At that point in your life, where did you see yourself headed? What was the goal, or was it just simply to keep manufacturing this, the state of flow that you were seeking?
Yeah, it was certainly how I can be in that state more often. Mm-hmm. And so I dove really deep in this spirituality, questioned the word God and the church. I saw beautiful aspects of church, like prayer and silence and the music, the architecture. I was attracted to these pieces of art, of humans that I created, you know? So I was formulating all these different domains growing up in San Francisco. And then my mom being paranoid, thinking that my father was going to come around and kidnap my sister and I, we were pretty much locked in the house during the summers. And, you know, I became obese. Well, I would say obese, but overweight. And I was a caged animal. And so it wasn't until I had my older cousins come and move in that was, I guess he was like a big brother for me. And I learned how to play sports. I learned how to travel, because he would take me downtown to these like through these sketchy areas so that we could pick up, you know, the latest record single or tape, you know. And mm-hmm. So he was showing me these worlds that were outside of living in a house, being locked up. And then I had an auntie that would travel from all these foreign lands, because she was a flight attendant, and she would tell us these stories, and I would just be like, that's what I want to do. I want to be able to travel the world. I want to like see new places, try new food, meet new people, like get the smells.
Well, yeah. Let me do this. Let me just put it all on a straight line so we can go to the next segment here. So I hear this. Very aware young child because of some challenges, right? You had a very supportive mother who was willing to allow you to grow with your sense of difference. So that was healthy in that sense. I hear you also saying it also created a little bit of charge in your life because you were willing to push when things didn't seem to fit right for you. Because of your challenges with hearing, you are a person that was able to get in touch with your sensual nature as a perceiver and as an emotional being. So you were making deep contact with life. Through high school, it sounds like you started to get a sense of your opportunities in a very different way than other kids, meaning I have an awareness of what it feels like to be in flow with life. So when there are things that are getting in your way that present a barrier to it, you're looking for shortcuts and you're willing to go find them. You're comfortable with other people, adults, so you're taking shortcuts around the educational system and connecting and following your interests and passions, which happen to be uplifting other people, medicine, health, and fitness. Your challenge, we are getting into your challenge. It was really figuring out how to make that adjustment around who and what you're becoming. So let me ask you this. Was there that moment where maybe here's Tony Floreal, the flow person with tools and resources to make adjustments, to take advantage of opportunity, where everything came to a head in your life, and on the other side, you came out a different person where suddenly life got easier?
Yeah, the rock bottom moment happened when I moved to Guam for love. So I moved out to the tiny island nation in the south.
I've been there. It is tiny.
Yeah, right? It's like 15 miles by 30 miles.
Yeah, it's crazy small.
Crazy small. And moved out there for an island beauty. And just right off the bat, like, things just fell apart. I used my graduation money from college, so I actually graduated out of college after dropping out 3 times. But I always placed a lot of my happiness on a woman in a relationship, you know, and I had what I call like is my first holy shift moment where I had a dark night of the soul. I was questioning everything, like what's the point of life? I was fairly suicidal. I was my lowest point and cried out to, you know, the heavens, like, you know, help me, I'm alone. Like, what did I do next? I like basically blew all my money. I was staying at a house. I was almost homeless. And I remember crying myself to sleep, and I woke up the next day, and it was like the veil was removed from my eyes, and I saw the world like I was a child again. And I just felt like whole and complete and one for the first time in my life. And I realized that, at least in a certain degree in that moment, that nothing outside of me could ever like complete me, make me feel whole or one. There was nothing to fix. I was already it. And that was my first shift, you know, having that crisis, mental meltdown, breakdown, and woke up like almost like, you know, like a new person.
So here you are in a foreign country, and this is where your superpower really comes out. Here you are in a foreign country, you've invested your happiness in another person. It after a significant transition as a man, you've graduated college, and that was an ambition that you, sounds like you really had to lead into to finish, right? So everything's going right, and then suddenly your happiness is taken away. You find yourself almost homeless. You're basically bouncing around, right? What is it about Tony Floreal that comes out on the other side with greater awareness, greater sense of connection to life, and a greater connection to self?
I think there's always been a part of me that never gives up, no matter how hard things are. And, you know, I mean, until I give up, until I actually have a complete mental breakdown and I don't know what to do next, you know, and so I completely let go and surrender to all of life, this notion of essentially the source. You know, people have different names for it, including God. And I just was like, I'm willing to die. You know, I'm willing to go and just let this all end, you know, show me a way to continue, because like, what is the point of all this, this mysterious life that we live? And like we were saying earlier, man, we're on this, you know, blue marble that's rotating around the sun, blasting through the universe, like, and how we take that for granted. But in that perspective, you lose that perspective, you know? And so I was like, what is the point of all this? Are we just here just to like, you know, eat shit, breathe, sleep, like, you know, like have sex, like all the different senses, or there's something more going on?
You said something that's really critical to me. You said, I'm a person that doesn't quit. And then you talked about surrender, which means there's a difference between the two. I heard in your life that your challenges forced you to find your way as a person, and you were never willing to give up on yourself. But there were points in your life, and this was one where the biggest shift happened, where you said, I'm not quitting. And the opportunity on the other side was, but will you surrender? Meaning, I don't have an answer for this. So I'm left with nothing else but committing to showing up in this surrender. So you're not quitting on yourself, you're letting go.
That's correct. Yeah, definitely. You're just, you don't know the answer, so you're just surrendering to something else to provide you that next step, some direction.
Yeah, there's something bigger.
And it became obvious. It literally was like a lightning bolt moment, Satori moment for me. I was like, oh shit, like, holy shit. Like, and you know, I had a few of these throughout my life until like there's many shifts that happen, because just as when you identify with a certain person per se, Tony Flo Rio, you get presented more challenges and more opportunities to be humble and to like keep learning. You know, I think that's the part that people miss with enlightenment. They think that there's this end point, but you know, I found that I can never not know enough, you know, like I got to keep going. And I'm always surprised, like the person that I'm becoming, you know, because I understand how this formula works and the science behind it now. So that the science has actually helped put a language for it. So that don't sound as new agey. I think new age has a role. It's just missing certain components, some critical components, but overall, like, you know, everybody's is pretty much talking about the same thing, that had transformations and the integration that happens after that.
All right, so you're on the other side of this holy shift problem. Where does life start to get easier, and how does your role change in the world? What are you doing? Take me to like a day after that happened.
So yeah, just waking up on the floor, opening my eyes and again, like seeing the world like it was brand new again. And at that point, I just trusted that like things will start to reveal itself and start to, doors will start to open. And I didn't know like how or what, but I just felt like I just needed to like get outside and just move my body and walk.
So today, were you at staying at a friend's house at that time, or where were you?
No. So at that point, my ex-girlfriend, she worked for the airline. So she found a bulletin that one of the pilots was renting a room. So she actually fronted me the money to move into this place.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And
so you're living with a bunch of pilots.
Yeah, so I move in, but none of the pilots are on island, so they're off island. I'm just in this house all by myself.
Oh, wow.
I'm like rummaging through the cabinets to eat like canned foods or whatever, because my landlord and landlady were like, hey, you know, go ahead and help yourself to any of these things in here. And, you know, I had no car. You know, it's hard to get around on Guam. There's no public transportation, really. And it's hot as fuck, so
very hot.
Huggy, right? So but yeah, I just knew that if I just walked, like as I remember in the past being in flow, just the next step would reveal itself. And so I was working at the Paradise Fitness in the capital of Agaña. And
as a trainer, what are you doing there?
As a trainer, yeah. Okay, yep. And so what was an issue was the fact that I didn't, at least the affluent clients on Guam travel during the summer. So I didn't have any clients, but fortunately I brought my massage table because I had a massage therapist training. So one random person, he taught hula, you know, the Hawaiian dance and art form, and he saw that at a table and he's like, hey, my uncle just flew in from Hawaii, his neck and shoulders is killing him from the flight, would you just, you know, work on him for like 15 minutes or so? And so I worked on this guy, his name was Uncle Ed, and he was just like, man, it was like night and day difference. He went and told the hula instructor like, hey, you know, this guy just helped me. So then that guy came over, Benji, and he was like, hey, would you work on us like full 90-minute massage each? And so I had two appointments just like that. And so I did it and they were just like blown away. And then next you know, they started telling, you know, the island about me. And so my phone started ringing and, you know, it was like, and then with food, like, they have fiestas on the island. So it's like family gatherings, like almost every day, somebody in the neighborhood's having a fiesta. So they would invite me to hang out and I was meeting all these new people. And then I would come home with like a stack of eight, you know, paper plates of food with foil, you know?
Yeah.
So the food got answered. And then one thing led to another. And long story short, I just ended up on TV, newspaper, and radio, starting a boot camp for kids on the island, and teaching the kids, you know, this philosophy about flow. And
this is amazing to me. Okay, your life blows up, you wake up, and somehow Tony Flow Real's superpower is, hey, I'm actually more clear, I'm more accepting, I'm more open to life. Then you take us through the story where you're trusting, somehow faith shows up, you're trusting that life's going to present what you need, and it does. Your career is starting to line up, you're seeing where you could potentially serve others through your skills that you have. And then you take us to this huge leap where suddenly, like, you become like a mini celebrity on the island, and you're facilitating a camp. If you could name how that all happened, let's just say you can give us a word for what went down in that short period of time. What word would that be?
Yeah, that's definitely a hard one. I think it's a combination of faith and trust, you know. Maybe had to create a new word.
So that's the shift that you went through, maybe for not thinking that somehow investing in stuff outside of your control was going to make everything better. After your holy shift, the leap was from that to, I'm going to trust that it's going to work out. So you're investing some sort of inner trust.
Yeah, my realization came when I was walking to the local bus and I just looked up in the heavens, you know, the sky, and it was like, how is it that animals are surviving on this planet? Like, how are we even different? Like, you know, the birds are getting fed every day, and all the different animals around the world. Like, I just completely surrendered to, like I said earlier, to the possibility of death. Mm-hmm. I had the courage just to be like, you know what? Like whatever, how this is all happening, this life, mm-hmm. you know, people have different names for it, right? But it was like, I'm willing to die, you know, just take care of me the way animals figure it out, you know?
So there's surrender going on, and you're trusting it's all going to work out at the same time.
Yeah, and it was just all of a sudden, it was like some weird video game thing where it was just like people were picking me up on the side of the road, like, you know,
hey, brother, what are you doing walking on Guam? Nobody walks on Guam. You crazy? Get in the car. Where do you need to go?
You know, like, and it was just like, whoa, and then it's just one thing led to another. And, you know, I mean, I ended up dating Miss Guam. I ended up getting my heart broken by her. And it was another.
Whoa, hold on.
Oh, yeah.
I got to slow you down for that one. So life turns into, this is great because we're getting a snapshot of Tony Flow Real now when you come into a flow reality. It sounds like you're saying deeper stages of surrender. You're trusting life to provide it. And then there's plenty of people that have the mindset that that's going to happen, but shit doesn't line up. But you surrender and have faith, and it starts to work out. Money shows up. You're getting support. It's coming from weird places. You become sort of a celebrity. You're dating Miss Guam? How did that happen?
Yeah, so I remember going to the local Catholic church and, you know, still trying to work out what was happening, you know, after this first holy shift. And I remember just sitting quietly in the church and just praying, you know, and another moment of surrender. And then I remember walking over to the post office because I had to send out a letter, and I'm standing in line and I just look to my right. And there's this beautiful island girl dressed in red, just gorgeous green eyes. I'm just like, what? You know, and then there's this thing inside of me like you need to say something to her or else you're gonna have regret, you know? And I'm like, I don't want regret. I don't wanna die on my deathbed with regret, you know? And so I just looked at her and she looked at me and I was like, you have a really pretty dress. And she was like, she just kind of smiled like, oh, thank you, you know? And then it was like this awkward moment. I didn't know what to say next. I was like, oh shit, what do I say next? And then I looked at her hands and I saw that she had red, beautiful red nail polish on. And I was like, yeah, your dress matches your nails. And she's like, oh my God, you noticed. Thank you so much, you know? And then she gets up, she's next in line and she's paying for something at the teller. And then I go next to her and she's already like paid and leaving. And I'm like trying to pay the you know, postmaster, whatever. Like, and I like go running out to the parking lot and almost like a stalker, you know? It's like, it was just like, and she
well,
gets,
some would call that smitten.
Yeah, right. And totally smitten. I approached her. She's stepping in her truck and I said, hey. And she turns around. She's like, yeah. And I'm like, I was like, what are you doing this weekend? And she's like, what do you mean? I was just like, I don't know why. And she's like, I'm like, well, I'm taking you out.
You had faith that all the money was going to come and everything else.
Right? Yeah, right. And she looked at me. She's like, excuse me, are you going to even ask what my name is first? And we both started laughing. I was like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm Tony. What's your name? She's like, Jessica. And I'm like, nice to meet you, Jessica. She says, I can't do this weekend because it's my daughter's birthday. So I thought like she was blowing me off, you know?
Yeah.
I was like, okay, well, what's your phone number? And she says it's, she gives her phone number, right? And I'm like, it was basically the 3-digit number and then like a version of her name. And I thought she was blowing me off again, you know, giving me a fake number. And so I got her number and we parted ways. And then I called a few days later, left a message, didn't hear anything back. 2 days later, left another message. And then I didn't hear anything back. I just let it go. Just completely let it go, forgot about it. 2 weeks later, she calls me up and says, hey, sorry I didn't call you back sooner. It's been really busy with work, school, and my daughter, but let's go out for dinner, you know?
Well, yeah. You know, part of the reason I'm slowing you down to talk about that, because I think it's a great symbol of the leap that you made. Here you come from kind of a frustrated young man. You have a sense of flow in life, but you're still kind of wobbling a little bit with investing in the idea that life's going to be okay by giving your happiness away to somebody else. But you make the shift, you surrender, and your life attitude changes from one of, I need that to make everything work, to, I'm just going to surrender and trust that it's going to work out. And then just everything starts to line up in your life in so many different ways.
Yeah, it's always been a journey and a process. You know, I felt like I didn't really figure it all out until probably about 5 years ago, and I had a real serious psychedelic trip that I almost died.
Was that from psychedelics? You did?
Yeah, so I took magic mushrooms.
Uh-huh.
And I was the person that everybody warns about that thinks fly. And so it was another miracle. I walked out of the hospital a couple hours later. It was just some scratches and some bruises, a couple of cuts, nothing that needed stitches.
Well, hold on. Let me get the story. So when you say, you mean that quite literally, you thought you could fly? What happened?
Yeah, so I was really curious about psychedelics. You know, I had a lot of high school friends that did it. But I was more on like the clean side of things. I always was leading more towards meditation, movement, sports. And then, I don't know, it just never, presented itself with me. And then, you know, through London Real, as you said, how we kind of came to know each other and, Joe Rogan show, I started to hear about psychedelics and the impact that it was having on people. I heard the history behind it. I've heard like different points of view that, you know, it was the substance of the devil, so to speak. So, or it was a form of cheating. And I saw people in my community in Canada when I lived in Vancouver. I was actually married and going through a separation at that time, but I started to get curious, like, well, what is this other thing? Because I've always been an explorer. I was always looking at what other tools are out there and travel the world with trying to figure out different things that help myself and other people. And so I came to this point where I heard that if you had access to close to 5 grams of psilocybin mushroom, like, take it, like, go on that, like, hero's journey. I was basically naive. I trusted a friend of mine who had done it many times. And the first rule is, like, never do it above ground floor. You know, second rule is, if you can, don't do it indoors. Be out in nature. You know, so there's all these set and setting things that they talk about, and we basically violated all of them. Mm-hmm. So I took these mushrooms. I thought I was going schizo. It wasn't my first psychedelic experience. My first one was through ayahuasca. Mm-hmm. And I saw, like, people lose their marbles. And I was, like, the guy that was, like, in the eye of the storm, the guy that was, like, making sure everything was going to be okay. So I had my wits about me. But this time with mushrooms, I was losing everything. Everything was, like, dissolving. And I just kind of, like, talked to myself and said, you got this. You can figure this out. So I remember putting my jacket on, and I was walking to the front door of my friend's apartment, and he stopped me. He was like,
Tony, like, stop. I can't let you go. You asked me to watch you. You got 2 more hours to go.
And this is where it gets really spooky, because I said, okay, man. And then I turned around, and there was no will or free will on my part, or volition or choice or decision. I watched my body sprint across his apartment and, like, went through his glass window on the third floor. And I was really lucky because my legs caught the ledge, so I didn't, like, torpedo out into the alleyway. So my torso was out the window, but my legs were still in the building. And again, no free will. I watched my hands push off the side of the building. My legs kicked out, and then I fell like a flying squirrel and just, like, belly flopped. And again, this is another miracle, but in that alleyway and the entire block, there was nothing there but a street. But right where I fell was a concrete planter box, and I fell on dirt and landed on a bush and thought I got impaled, but it cushioned my blow. And I got up. I wasn't impaled, but I was bleeding, and nothing was broken. Nothing hurt. I wasn't in pain. And then I looked at, and I heard the end of the video game, like when you die in a video game, like, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, oh, fuck, no.
I'm in the afterlife.
And I was like, no. All I could think about was my mom, my sister, my nieces. I was like, no. And I slowly came to, and I realized that I was fine. And then I looked up to the heavens, and I screamed like a beast. I'm alive.
So you had a near-death experience.
Yeah.
That's essentially what you had.
Yeah, one of many, actually, but this was the big one that really shifted me back to your question. You know, it was the one that I realized, like, there was nothing to fix. Like, stop chasing shit, yeah, including self-development, including psychedelics. Like, use these as tools. But the message I got was, again, you don't know where you came from, you don't know where you're going, but you do know you're here. So while you're here, do something about it.
Yeah.
Live this life fully.
Wow.
Absolutely. That's, yeah, it just kept getting deeper, more aware, but more humble, and just, you know, really appreciating the little things. I'm still human. I forget, but I the best part is I can catch myself sooner.
Yeah.
So that's the key. And when I'm locked in with the identity that, you know, I'm a victim, or, you know, I don't know what the solution of the problem's going to be. I just tell myself, like, one more day, just do one more day, just wait one more day, it'll come. And knowing how, like, learning happens, how flow happens, like how all the grind and flow, it's all part of learning, you know. And that process is so fun now to face challenges head on.
Well, that's the, I've had a near-death experience, and I think that's the gift. And you're talking about it. So here you are, had already developed trust. You had a sense of awareness about your value already. And then you fell into the illusion a little bit, like listening to what other people feel they need to get their sense of meaning. And you bought into it. But then you ran into that, you had a near-death experience, meaning, I realize I'm all here. I don't need to go anywhere else. So on the other side, there's the more awake Tony, waking up to his purpose and reality, and with deeper connection and love for life. So here you are on the other side of your near-death experience, a little deeper, a little wiser, a little more connected. Now I want to move you into what we see on the outside looking at Tony Floreal, a man connected to empowerment, a man who has a mission. You have a brand. Where did that all, I hear you took us on the other side of your introduction to, I almost said Tony Floreal, to London Real. You started to look into that a little bit. Where did the clarity come in about the Tony Floreal that wants to engage people and help people and serve people through a brand?
Yeah, it actually started back in 2010. I put up my first blog. I always spelled my name T-O-N-E as Tony since I was, you know, a trainer working with muscles and muscle.
Ah, gotcha. Yeah.
You know, it was just like an artist in me that just wanted to be different. You know, I think it's just really that had a big ego, you know. And so when I started this brand in 2010, everybody was talking about gettingyourname.com. And, you know, my real name is Antonio's Emmanuel Ano Giannakis.
Oh, wow.
.com. So I was like, I don't think that's going to work. I need a pen name, a stage name, because I was in the middle of writing a book that not many people know, that I wrote a book called Holy Stretch, about how to like stretch into the unknown through actually like physical stretching and metaphorically tap into like a place of wholeness, you know. But I, again, knowing how synchronicities work and flow, and I went shopping with my wife at the time, and we were looking for shoes for me, and I saw a shoe on the rack on the wall. I picked it out and I looked inside, and I would say like 2 weeks before it, I already put it out there. Like, I put a question out to the universe, what would be my name, you know, .com. And so I looked in this shoe and it said Floreal in there, like F-L-O-R-E-A-L, the way I spell it, or Floreal, depending on the language. But I was like, oh shit. And I like showed my wife, I'm like, this is my name. She's like, oh my God, that's so you. So the brand Floreal with, you know, F-L-O-W-R-E-A-L, that became my brand. I had TonyFloreal.com. And being on Facebook, you know, I actually wasn't Facebook, but listening to Joe Rogan through a referral, some guy at the clinic was like, hey, you heard this guy, Joe Rogan? I'm like, oh, the Fear Factor guy? You know, the comedian? He's like, yeah, he has this amazing podcast. And I was like, that's cool. And so I started listening to it, and I came across London Real. And I was like, oh shit, there's another real out there in the world. Like, let me listen to what they're about. And this is what's crazy about synchronicities and the path that we go on. So I looked into London Real, and I'm like, oh my God, they're doing this amazing podcast. They're teaching people like how to broadcast.
I am here with Tony Floreal, who is basically a de facto ambassador.
And then that's how it all happened, because I was always trying to figure out how to get the message out, but I didn't want to like be, you know, someone that was like pushy or like, you know, knocking on people's doors, or I felt like it just had to happen naturally. I don't know how, but it would reveal itself just like the way everything else in my life had. Mm-hmm. I just need to be ready for that opportunity. So London Real showed up. I ended up visiting the studio. Brian Rose and I connected. And then just one thing led to another with meeting the community, people asking to be on podcast. They heard this story, how I took psychedelics and almost died, you know, and then learned about Wim Hof. I was trying to prove the Iceman wrong about the ability to stay in cold water and develop the inner fire. So that became one of the things that sort of boosted my brand, because Wim Hof started to take notice of me as I was trying to prove him wrong on social media. Mm-hmm. And then again, he invites me to his house in Amsterdam through a mutual person that I met that was filming him. And it was just like, this is Forrest Gump, man. Like, I'm literally like,
yeah. Well, you had learned that lesson a long time ago, but it sounded like you still needed one more step to really open up and to take the next leap towards purpose in your life. You call it getting your message out there, flow, but that's just one thing that we can hear in your story. That part of your life has really always been there. And that's, you know, I mean, it's a brand that's connected to some level of experience and authenticity there. You really do line up. And when you line up, things happen fast.
All right, let's do a little tracking here for the listeners.
Tony Floreal, you got a sense of what you want to do. You step into this personal brand identity. You are reaching out and already connecting with some of the leading figures in the field of podcasting, some of the celebrities on that side, but also some of the celebrities on the side of personal development, like Wim Hof. So immediately your brand is taking off through quite naturally through a flow state. All right, so let's take you to where you are now. So I'm talking to a man I've been chasing for a little while. Did not chase, I let it go, but you know what I mean. I wanted to get a sense of his story. And I basically hear a man that is very resilient from early on, resilience connected to life, based around that early challenges that you had around your hearing, but took full advantage of it. A superpower started to show up earlier on in life where you're able to really heighten your focus to get into flow. And you really didn't need anybody else to validate it for you. You carried it with you your entire life. You made some big shifts around some crises. One, death. The second one, the loss of the illusion of love, like your happiness was all wrapped up in somebody else. And then the next one was the answer was somehow outside of you, so I'll take psychedelics. So you had a near-death experience. On the other side, you reconnect to life, you plug into your brand, you get lined up, and life just starts to happen for you. What do you see as your mission now? Because you do have a brand out there, and I see that you're very... This part of you doesn't really come out in the interview, but I know as a person that's running my own company, there's a lot of savvy in Floreal. You manage your image and your brand. You're out there around key events. You get invited. What do you see now as your mission, and how do you want to serve the world from this moment onward?
I want to continue to be an example for people of what's possible and eventually probable. You know, mm-hmm. I want them to see that a lot of people are just talking and sound good, but I want people to see the evidence mm-hmm. that, like, and that's the only reason why I do social media, because it is a pain in the ass. I just like to be out in the world, like interacting with people. I like social media in terms of connecting and networking and seeing what other people and my peers are doing and staying connected with them and friends and family. But, you know, it's the tool. So I just want to continue to share my own experiences, which are my own experiences, but give people the possibility and maybe help like ripen their seed quicker, be a catalyst for their own amazing life. And so, you know, I've been guilty of spending thousands of dollars seeking even self-development seminars and transformational seminars and seeing them use marketing and, you know, certain mind techniques to almost prey on naive, gullible and just like broken people who are seeking for the answers, because I was one of them. And so that I just want to educate people that, you know, there are these things out there that are only more concerned about like making money off of other people's suffering and, you know, dangling the golden carrot. So my thing is like, less talking, let's like actually interact together. In flow, let me take you through my day of flow called the Magic Flow Bus. You know, let's go on a little journey through a 12-hour plus day of the things that I do that like allows synchronicity to unfold. Mm-hmm. And so, and now they have this contrast, like, holy shit, I could just be me. There's nothing to fix. I'm around other people that are just as amazing, awesome, kind, caring, that have the ability to listen, and let's just have conversations about the hard stuff. Let's be real. And, you know, let's see what will unfold as a result of that. So that's pretty much my mission, is to take what I know, everything's converged, every tape I've heard, video, person, things I learned at school, things like what not to do, and now it's like let's go full throttle on this now, because there's, for me, is I feel so confident in myself because I finally put all the pieces together. And you know, let's help people, other people, find that same within themselves.
Thank you so much, Tony, for being here. It was truly a joy to get to connect, and I look forward to putting this thing together.
Hey, my pleasure, Jerry. And just one last word for the audience is, you're your greatest filter. If you just be yourself completely, you'll see who are the ones that are really going to stick around for you and who are the ones that you need to get away from.
All right, folks, that's a wrap. If you enjoyed the episode, please leave a review on whatever platform you're listening to. This just helps put it in the hands of the people likely to get something out of it. If you'd like to dig a little deeper and see what we got cooking here at TUI Media, you can visit our website at tuimedia.com. Wishing you grace to fill your sails today. Stay great in the meantime, and I'll see you on the next Pioneers of Insight.
Done. I can never not know enough, you know, like I got to keep going, and I'm always surprised, like the person that I'm becoming.